Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister is good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest, Janice Barcelo, is joining me today for between 1 and 2 hours, however long she can give us. Janice, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Vinny. My name is actually Janice, like Denise with a J.
Ah.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having me on. I'm really glad to be here. I hope actually that we get to do 2 hours because there's so much material to cover, you know, that I'm hoping we can cover bunches of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we start off by letting the audience, who maybe are not familiar with you, know a little bit about yourself.
Let me say that my website is birthofanewearth.com, and I have a blog called birthofanewearth.blogspot.com. And if people want to check out my work, those are very good sources. Basically, I have a background in a personal background in having difficulty giving birth to my children. So I have a lot of birth trauma. And my exploration, you know, in terms of how to heal from my birth trauma took me into understanding how trauma affects my body, my mind, my soul, which took me into information about trauma-based mind control and what the U.S. government has been up to. And I started to put these pieces together and to realize that the protocols of hospital birth, what they're doing to babies in the hospital, is actually, it mirrors the techniques of trauma-based mind control. And when you combine the fact that they're torturing babies as they enter this dimension with a few of the facts that you mentioned, that our water is being fluoridated. We have mercury in our dental fillings. There's genetically modified foods that are altering our genetic integrity and altering our capacity to reproduce. We have vaccines that also contain things like aborted human fetal tissue that scramble the DNA of the children that they're being injected into, combined with pig DNA, monkey DNA, caterpillar, insect DNA, dog, guinea pig brains. I mean, just disgusting ingredients being injected directly into us. Plus chemtrails, HARP, nuclear radiation. The list goes, it's pretty extensive. Pharmaceutical drugs. we get a very, very clear picture that there's an expansive attempt to modify the human race. And we can have no doubt that the human race has been modified if we understand that we're using a very small portion of our brain potential and that most of our DNA is dormant. And so scientists call it junk. Yes, so we have all this junk DNA, but the fact is that the creator doesn't make mistakes, and so it's not junk. But it is dormant, and it is dormant because we've been genetically altered. And there's a variety of ways that they're altering us, including exposing us to severe forms of trauma, which alter the way that our nervous system develops and expresses itself and alters the signals going into our brain and coming out of our brain back out to our body. So it's altering the way that we receive data and the way that we transmit the information out into the grid, into the morphogenetic grid. So I would, you know, hospital birth is a fundamental part of this larger package, and I want to stress that the same people who are creating the protocols of hospital birth are the people that are creating the vaccines. And when you see that Pfizer, who's a vaccine and pharmaceutical drug maker, owns Monsanto, who makes the genetically modified foods, you begin to see how this whole web interweaves itself in order to create this mutation that becomes us. Yes, so that we can operate. You know, I read a story yesterday, Vinny, of police officers masquerading as human beings beat the life out of a 33-year-old defenseless man by hitting him repeatedly with clubs, 8 of them. And people were snapping the whole thing with their cell phones and calling 911 to report that this guy was being murdered. But the fact is that these guys are probably going to get away with it because they're in uniform and because we're actually paying them to harass us and to murder innocent people, you know, through tax dollars, which is even an even bigger insanity. But the reason I brought that up is because it's an indication of how far-reaching the mutation is, of how our race is expressing itself. You know, it's certainly not our blueprint is not being expressed. The way that we were designed originally is so altered that we become...
Well, are you saying that we weren't designed to beat each other to death with clubs for no reason?
I'm saying that the original... You have to expose a baby to extreme amounts of abuse and neglect and severe trauma and deprivation in order to turn him into a machine that will kill an innocent person for no particular reason. It's not the original plan. You understand? Something has happened to those men. Something very severe has happened to them to turn them into that kind of a mutation of a human being. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it's conditioning, basically, alongside the shampooing.
It's conditioning, but it's also quite neurological, quite physiological, quite biochemical. In other words, just going to give you a brief overview, okay, of the brain. This is very, very simplistic, but so people can understand. When we've been exposed to trauma, especially in the womb, which all of us have, or early during the birth process or very early in life, it keeps our reptilian brain in a constant state of agitation and hypervigilance to threat. And when that is happening, which is happening all the time because of what we're being exposed to, the higher parts of our brain, the limbic system that would allow us to have a healthy love relationship and to nurture our young and the cortex that would allow us to have a communication with the divine mind and to control our impulses. In other words, if we had an impulse to murder somebody, the cortex would naturally jump in there and say, wait a second, you know, let me see if this is an appropriate action to take under the circumstances. But because the reptilian brain is dominating our behavior and our activity, these other parts of our brain are not developed properly and are not functioning the way that they should. And so we become impulsively violent, which is not a natural state of affairs. It's totally a result. You know, when we look at the technological world that we live in, which is completely not natural, it's like this artificial system has been overlaid over what is real. But that artificial system keeps our reptilian brain agitated through all the noise, you know, through weed whackers and lawnmowers and planes and trains and the trucks that go roaring by and all of this clamor that's not natural to the nervous system. And so our reptilian brain is like constantly going, I can't curse. What the hell's going on here? You know, how am I supposed to relax? How can I sleep at night when all these bright lights are happening and, you know, there's chemtrails in the sky and I'm being blasted with harp frequencies and all these sounds are interrupting my ability to be at peace. So we are really altered by everything. And I'm going to say, you know, we are existing in a satanic-infested reality. And this satanic-infested reality has been deliberately constructed in order to keep us in this condition. Because if we move... Go ahead.
Well, the satanic element to it, yeah. I've found of great interest because... They are a religion of oppositors, basically. They'll take anything that's good and do the direct opposite and still masquerade as though it's good. So, you know, in a satanic world, a police officer is supposed to, well, let's say have the stated objective of protecting and serving the citizenry, but in reality he's there to actually punish and enslave the citizenry. A politician in a satanic world has the stated objective of serving the people and protecting them from threats and so on and so forth from outside and maybe even within the country, forms of corruption and that kind of thing. And so in a satanic world, obviously, they're there to make the threats and manufacture them and to destroy the country.
That's correct. I mean, everything gets turned on its head in a satanic world because... what's good becomes bad, and what's bad becomes good. So even though we're raised to believe that the police are here to protect us, our whole system, you know, if you're driving a car and there's a cop behind you, notice what happens in your physical vehicle because you realize that there's evil in back of you. And the body responds instantly to the knowing that this is evil. There is no goodness there. These people who are signing up to be part of the satanic military or the satanic police forces are there to defend and protect evil. They're not there to defend and protect goodness, on the contrary. And so that is the truth, with a capital T, you know, and anybody that has a connection with their body would know that immediately, except we're so mind-controlled that our minds are overriding all the information that's coming into our body, telling us what's really going on. You know, we can know more, Vinny, in a millisecond of feeling something than if we spent weeks trying to figure it out with our minds. So we have to learn to pay attention to the sensations that are entering into our bodies, because we can receive mega loads, you know, of data that will tell us the truth about what's really going on here, and not be so hung up on using the mind, because the mind is not a very good indicator of truth. It's not accurate. It'll trick us, you know. It'll trick us into saying, oh, the cops are there and they're protecting us, or the military is there to protect us. to protect the well-being of the American citizens, for example, while they're stampeding over the American citizens, while they're locking American citizens in their homes, you know, so that they can search for a fictitious gunman for, a false flag event that the government itself created that has no, it's not even real. So anybody that's in touch with their body would have that information. Okay, anybody that's been disconnected from their body has even disassociated because they've had so much trauma and the soul therefore cannot inhabit the body. The soul just checks out. Well, the disassociated people are the ones who are going to be much more likely to join the military.
It's like they're living in a cloud of lies and poison that manipulates them into serving something that is not of their interest.
They're very much biological robots. It's as if, there is no organic intelligence in there that would allow them to discern good from bad. Clearly you would know that the military is a negative force if you are connected to any form of source intelligence, including your body. But if you're disconnected, if you've been so traumatized that you've checked out, if all of your systems, for the most part, have been shut down, the rational thinking part of your brain, the part of your brain that allows you to have healthy relationships, then you can march forward from the reptilian system alone and become an automaton in the machine.
Now, people don't understand the reptilian system, and basically, it's pretty straightforward. Have you ever said something to somebody after they made you really angry, and you instantly reacted, and the spew forth of abuse comes out of your mouth, and then suddenly, if you had stopped, taken a deep breath, waited 10 seconds, and you wouldn't have said the same thing? That's a reptilian brain response. It's your instantaneous fight or flight. You ever accidentally beat the crap out of somebody just, viciously, all of a sudden, or wanted to hurt somebody of that nature? That's a reptilian brain response. Now, the only problem is when that response becomes your predominant response.
Yeah.
Once all of the other things, logic, empathy, giving a frack about humanity, all of those things just seem to disappear, and the only thing you're left with is full-on abuse and scumbaggery. And we'll be right back after the break with my very special guest, Janice. Is it Barcello?
Yeah, that's good. Thanks.
Yeah, Janice Barcello. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Her website is birthofanewearth.blogspot.com. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We like to boogie it down in the Schwarzenegger sense of the word. My very special guest, who is on a little bit of feedback there, who needs to turn her speakers down, is Janice Barcello. Welcome back.
Let me turn those speakers down. Hang on a sec.
Oh, it seems to be working fine now.
How is that?
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Now, we were talking about the reptilian complex, and basically what people need to realize is this is a very important part of the brain, and for some people it governs everything. These people are called psychopaths. They got no frickin' higher brain activity of any kind. They can't nurture young. They can't feel empathy. They can, on the other hand, ruthlessly beat people to death with clubs for no reason.
That's right. You know, the reptilian brain, I don't want to give the reptilian brain a totally bad rap, because it is
the reason for our survival.
It is. It keeps us alive. I mean, those things that we don't think about, like our heart rate and our pulse and our blood pressure and all of those things that keep, you know, our breathing, the reptilian brain is in charge of keeping the physical vehicle alive. And because the physical vehicle is at such threat and risk, because of what it's being exposed to, the reptilian brain is in a constant state of hypervigilance, you know? And this is why it's dominating everything. It's solely because of what we're being exposed to, and on a continuous basis. If people turn into psychopaths, then they have had enormous amounts of deprivation. You know, from the minute that they enter the womb, probably, there's been no bonding and there's been no availability for human love or human contact, you know, of any kindness. I mean, if you look into the very dark family bloodlines, they're deliberately traumatizing infants in the womb, while they're in the womb. You know, exposing the mother to violence, exposing the mother to really horrific sound frequencies to disrupt the fetus in the womb. They're doing all sorts of things to try to turn that baby that's going to emerge from that womb into a psychopath who'll be another practicing Luciferian. But the trauma and the abuse begins while the baby is in the womb. And many of us, you know, even if we are gestated in a womb where we're not wanted, and I would venture to say there's at least half of us on the planet, maybe a much larger, you know, percentage than that, we're gestated in wombs where we're not wanted. We also do not have the coding for authentic human love, or for understanding how to create healthy human relationships. You know, if we're in the womb and, you know, our mother, we're alone for 6 or 8 weeks because we weren't consciously conceived. There's nobody there to greet us. And then our mother finds out that we're there and kind of goes, oh, man, now what am I going to do? You know, maybe I should have an abortion. Well, then our development is altered. A critical window of opportunity for us to actually develop the potential for human love has been severely undermined and perhaps totally missed. Because that's our first imprint of relationship. And so, of course, our brain is going to be altered. Of course, our whole neurology is going to be altered if we're in a womb where we're not loved, or where there's like a psychopathic murderer after us that wants us dead. That's what it's like, because we can't protect ourselves from a mother that wants to kill us as babies that are in the womb. And, you know, we're in a culture where the medical profession will tell you that, oh, babies aren't even in there. You know, there's no consciousness there. There's no awareness. Babies don't feel pain. But as you go deeper into understanding the power of the extreme sensitivity of a developing baby in the womb and right at birth, and the heightened state of awareness that they are in, and the heightened state of learning that is going on while they're in the womb, you would realize that the medical profession is being controlled by the Luciferians, who are deliberately lying to us. In other words, turning it opposite. Okay? At the time that we're totally at the most sensitive and learning the most, they're going to say we're not even there and we can't feel anything. I mean, we have doctors in this country, in the United States, Vinny, who are strapping newborn infants, baby boys, to boards with their arms strapped and their legs strapped, and cutting off the most sensitive part of their penis without anesthesia. And they're doing that every single day in the United States. These people are psychopaths. These people are the ones who have no capacity to have empathy for an infant that is making sounds and screams, the likes of which you'll never hear ever anywhere, like if you watch a video of a circumcision or are physically present for a circumcision. But there's people doing this.
Yeah. Just think about this. Picture this, guys. Your foreskin is being chopped off without anesthesia. Okay? Visualize it. Okay. Man, that makes me feel terrible. Oh, God.
Imagine how the infant is feeling. And imagine the disassociation that has to take place, not only for that baby boy, because of the betrayal and the abandonment and the freaking layers of ritual sexual torture that that baby is being exposed to, and the parents have consented. So, yeah, disassociation is going to happen, because that's the only way. Like you said before, Vinny, there's the fight or flight mechanism, right, when we're exposed to trauma. But infants can't fight and they can't flee. So there's a third option, which is the play dead option, where the nervous system goes on stillness, where everything shuts down and there's a blank stare. It's like, you know, there's nobody in there. That's what happens to the infants. And I'm going to venture to say that that's what's happening to the mothers who are sometimes in the same room.
That's also what happens to animals a lot of the times. Like if you pick up chickens or other forms of small animals, they'll try and get away from you first, and then they might try and scratch you. And if they can't do that, they just sit there and get really, really calm. And you know that they're scared. They're scared to death.
They're in shock, and you'll have people say, "Oh, the baby's not crying. See, it doesn't hurt." The babies are in shock. It's called parasympathetic shock. And it can have lifelong, you know, consequences for boys that are exposed to this as infants. They can develop a predisposition to going into parasympathetic shock every time they're confronted with anything that makes them uncomfortable. So you got these fathers, you know, walking into hospitals to help their partners give birth. But as soon as they get to the hospital, their body's going, "Not safe, not safe, something bad's going to happen here." Their body remembers everything, you know, and they go into shock. And so they can't even stand up to protect their babies or their partners during birth. They're just like mute. They're totally in shock as soon as they get to the hospital. So it becomes a lifelong pattern of going into parasympathetic shock and not being able to stand in your power when it's needed the most. Which, of course, if a father is with a mother and is not protecting her during birth and is not protecting their baby, that's going to be the beginning of a breakdown of the relationship, because the mother's not going to trust that guy anymore. You see, this is all on a very deep emotional level that all of this happens. Or to have some other guy standing in front of your partner, in front of her vagina, sticking his hand in her vagina while your baby's trying to get born, and then catching your baby? What's wrong with this picture? Is that the whole father's role has been usurped. And the fathers, especially in the United States and Israel, where they've been circumcised, are completely dysfunctional because of the circumcision. I mean, that's one of the main problems, I think.
Has there been some kind of study to that effect, seeing whether or not fathers are effective with or without a foreskin?
Well, I don't know that particular study has been done, but there's many studies that are now showing, for example, that men, adult men, who have been circumcised as infants, have what's called a personality trait disorder called alexithymia, which means they have trouble empathizing with other people's pain, and they also have trouble connecting with their own feelings. And certainly they have trouble articulating what they're feeling, probably because they're in a state of disassociation, of parasympathetic shock. They're not in there. They can't feel their bodies. They're just not connected. And that was a life-saving mechanism for them as infants, but it becomes a lifelong pattern. And we also know that circumcised men are having severe sexual problems, including impotence, erectile dysfunction. That foreskin is extremely important because when it meets the vaginal wall, it conditions the male brain to secrete hormones of love and of bonding with the woman whose vaginal wall that foreskin is meeting. However, when the foreskin is missing, the brain is not going to be producing those chemicals of bonding and of human love the way that it should be. And so those men are going to have a very difficult time bonding and really experiencing the deep levels of human love that is their birthright. And that is also, you know, affects their partners. If you're with a guy that's circumcised and your partner isn't like able to meet you on any level, we want to look to the roots of where this problem started. And very often we find that it is circumcision. So if you are interested in controlling an entire race and undermining what makes us spiritually potent, controlling our capacity to experience human love is brilliant. I mean, they didn't decide. I don't know if you ever heard of Cliff High. He does something called Cliff's Wuju. Yeah, he talks about they didn't decide to cut off an earlobe or pull out a fingernail. They chose the foreskin, to cut off the foreskin, because they knew the long-term ramifications of not having that piece of skin in terms of male-female relationships, male-female bonding. So it's very, there's a lot of intelligence. It's an evil intelligence behind.
How old is the tradition?
Before they're 8 days old is the tradition, and many of the babies are being snatched from their mothers.
I think you misunderstood the question.
Oh, go ahead. What was the question?
How long has this tradition been in practice for?
You know, it's a good question. We see images of it in Egyptian art, that they were circumcising in Egypt. But we know that Egypt is one of the places where the black magic begun. And in the Egyptian pictures, we see adult men being circumcised. But in the Judeo-Christian tradition, in the Bible, the people that follow that tradition are being told that they need to cut their infant's foreskin off in order to create a covenant with the God of the Bible. So I want to brace people for the truth that you know, religion is a malevolent attempt to distort our understanding of the Creator and to control our minds. So are we going
Let me see if I've got this straight. Men, brutally mutilate yourself because God wants you to.
Yeah.
Is that the mentality here?
It's even worse. It's like mom and dad brutally mutilate your son because God wants you to. God wants you to slice your dysfunctional religious beliefs, to carve them into your son's body.
Yeah. Well, why don't you just, like, I don't know, get a knife and carve some kind of a Star of David or something like that into the child's back without anesthetic or something of that nature? How much trauma is enough trauma? Why do people always want to put their kids through immense amounts of shockingly terrible experiences? I don't get it. I don't know about anybody else, but I had a pretty rough childhood, and it hasn't really benefited me any. I'm actually still freaking damaged and having a rough time. And it was only like later on, after my childhood was over, when I started making real good friends and meeting like decent older mentors and things like that, that I started to actually appreciate who I am and what I can do, and started to really get on with my life, damaged as I might be from all those previous years of really traumatic experience, including high school, which in my opinion is one of the worst forms of trauma-based mind control ever devised by man. We'll be right back after the break. Please don't desert me. Look at me, driving, and I won't stop.
and it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, I'll let them all die in exasperation, have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them, and I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end a planet in a holocaust, 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 in a holocaust.
I love my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars, no handlebars.
Okay, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Janice Barcello, and I apologize for the little bit of dead air there. And we're talking about trauma-based mind control and the reptilian brain and ritual mutilation.
Sexual torture, ritual mutilation.
So it's a nice, bright, fun, happy, bubbly show that we've got here for you today, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're all listening and enjoying it. I also wanted to say that not only do we have like the really bad elements of humanity and all this trauma and so on and so forth, but there's also really good elements of humanity as well. You know, self-sacrifice for others and general do-goodery and things of that nature, which I think really speaks well of us. And I have the impression from you, Janice. You know, you've had a lot of complications with birth and stuff of that nature. I was wondering if you'd tell us some of your personal story about that and go into a little bit more detail.
The story is a little bit long, but I want to tell it. I want to tell certain parts of it so people can compare it to their own experience. Let me say that the birth trauma is intergenerational, and my grandmother actually gave birth on my mother's side. Gave birth to a baby in a hospital who was pulled out with forceps, and they crushed his skull. They gave him a brain hemorrhage and killed him. And so my mother, that trauma never got healed. My mother was the next baby through my grandmother's womb. And so my mother carries the trauma of the dead baby, you know, and of the hospital abuse. And very interestingly, me, as a fertilized egg, I actually lived in my mother's body while she was a fetus in my grandmother's womb. Because when we're developing fetuses, when girls are developing fetuses, that's when the eggs are developing, is when they are in their mother's womb. And so as an egg, I carry the information about what happened to my grandmother and to her baby. And I have to say that the dead baby scenario played itself out in my life in a huge way, because I've had 5 pregnancies and none of them ended up in a live birth. And the interesting thing about birth is that women tend to give birth the way they were born, the way they were birthed. And so if we were born in hospitals, 95% of hospital births are considered traumatic in the United States, and half of those are considered severely traumatic. And so if we've experienced severe trauma in a hospital birth, our children are likely also to be born in trauma, and it will escalate with each passing generation. So very simply for me, I'll say that I was gestated in a womb with trauma because I was an accident conceived by teenagers. My mother didn't want to marry my father. There was a lot of fear, a lot of shame, a lot of grief. And I formed in my mother's emotional experience and in her relationship to my father, which was not good. It was not a healthy relationship between her and him or between her and me. So That's a bad start. And then born in a hospital where my mother at that time was completely unconscious, likely given a drug called scopolamine, which they call devil's breath. Scopolamine makes people willing to do anything that the dark ones tell them to do. So if somebody takes scopolamine and another person says, give me your wallet, you'll just do it because scopolamine is that kind of a drug. And so my mother was not there to help me get born, which means I had to do it on my own. And I think a lot of us did in the 1950s that our mothers were unconscious. Some of them were giving a drug that supposedly prevents miscarriage, but that caused severe birth defects. And in any event, it was a very dark scene in the 1950s. Women were strapped down to the beds, to the metal tables, on their backs, sometimes unconscious, sometimes having hallucinations, and the baby's trying to get born. Okay, and that's the energy that I found myself. And then you come, you're finally out against unbelievable odds, right? Because they're given all kinds of drugs, which means I'm born on drugs. It's like trying to drive drunk, navigating through the birth canal, right? You finally get out, and what do you see is a bunch of satanic images, people wearing masks, yeah, people wearing gowns, instruments, metal, sharp, pointy instruments that are used to cut open women's body parts and to cut off infant body parts, you know, and ice-cold room, bright lights, I mean, just the antithesis of a loving environment that is sensitive to the extreme vulnerability of an infant. A hospital is a place of extreme toxicity, death, disease. You know, it's not a nice place to give birth to a child. We're totally mind controlled to even be considering walking into that environment to give birth. Okay, so that's me being born, okay? Then I come of age, you know, all through high school, I'm sort of repeating dysfunctional relationships like the one that I experienced while I was in the womb between my parents and between me and my mother. Finally get married to a man I don't really love. Oh, by the way, the first time I had sex, right, was in the backseat of a car, just like what happened to me when I was conceived. My parents were in the backseat of a car at a drive-in movie theater. So these imprints are extremely profound and repeat themselves because we're always creating circumstances that are similar to the original wounding in an effort to change the story and return the system to love. You see, our system's always trying to return itself to love, so we repeat the patterns, trying to get the happy ending, you see? Very often we don't get the happy ending, and we compound the trauma and re-traumatize ourselves. But when you've had birth trauma, and when that birth trauma is intergenerational, and you try to give birth to children, it's not going to be a pretty picture. And if you had in my case, I had a husband who was adopted and had severe adoption trauma, right? Never got to bond with his biological mother, was totally separated from her. So he had a low sperm count. He also was circumcised, which means he's carrying tremendous birth trauma. And I'm carrying it. And so when we together go into this hospital, right, to try to give birth to our children, it's not going to be a pretty picture because we're carrying massive amounts of imprinted pain that are going to play themselves out. Pregnancy and childbirth are very strong activators of past trauma. So people should understand, you know, if they're born in hospitals, particularly the men, if you're circumcised, you want to try to seek healing before you give birth to your children, so that it doesn't play itself out in the birth of your children. But I will say that my first husband, who had the adoption trauma, had a lot of ambivalence about pregnancy and birth, and that manifested as a low sperm count. And so we had a little trouble getting pregnant, and we went through the whole fertility, that whole dark scene and I took fertility drugs, which I found out years later caused birth defects. And sure enough, my baby had severe birth defects. And in the fifth month, I found out my baby had no skin on its stomach. And so the organs were floating around in the sac. And he probably would not have lived very long had I allowed him to be born naturally. But because I live in a culture where abortion is normalized, I chose to have an abortion. And again, years later, I discovered how they kill these babies through abortion. And I found out that in my case, what they did is they injected a saline solution into the amniotic sac, and the baby gulps it in, and his little lungs are burnt from the inside, and the outer layer of his skin was burnt. And so I gave birth to a baby that had been burnt to death in my womb. And even though we don't have our conscious mind doesn't understand what's happening, the reptilian brain knows everything that's going on. So this influenced my later births. Not in a good way.
Understandably. We're coming to break, Janice. We'll be coming back in just a few minutes, folks. I really thank you, Janice, for sharing this kind of very, very personal information about this experience that you're having, because it must be very traumatic just to even relive it and retell it. Like all the memories must come flooding back and what have you. So I'll try and be as sensitive as I can. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.